trouble. Make it double. To protect the world from devastation. To unite the peoples within our nation. To renounce the evil of the world. To extend our reach to the stars above.
Dan.
Elijah.
Live Christianly. Blast off at the speed of light.
Surrender now or prepare to fight.
Me.
Jacob.
That's right.
Perfect. It was great. It was fantastic. Welcome to the Live Christianly podcast. This is somewhat of a continuation of the previous episode, episode 2. This is now episode 3. Last episode we had Jacob, my brother and gamer and video game extraordinaire, with us.
Get all French there for a second.
Sounded right. And this is the continuation of that discussion, but this time we're going to be talking almost exclusively about video games and game culture and how it interacts with Christianity and things like that. So, hi, Jacob. How you doing? We love you.
Hey, thanks. Love you guys, too. Yeah, I'm doing good.
I didn't say I love you.
I mean, well.
I love you, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I love you.
So, Jacob, jumping into video games, what's so great about video games?
Well, they're—I don't know—they're really great. I wasn't quite ready for that question.
Do you want to take it slower?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Okay.
Why don't you tell us what you're currently playing? Because I find a lot of video gamers that I know have like a game that they're like really focused on at a time, like something that they're all about.
I don't have one right now. What I have, like, I have, like, I separated them kind of into two lists. Like, I have my AAAs that I'm currently playing, which are the big multi-million dollar releases that get midnight releases at game stores and stuff like that. And then I have my indies that are not released on a hard copy at all. You get them, like, digital downloads from Steam, and that's about it. So my AAAs I'm playing right now are, some are kind of new, like, on the newer side, like Shadow of Mordor, which is a Lord of the Rings Middle Earth game, Destiny, which is newish.
Podcast listeners, if you listen to one of our recent episodes, I told you how Lord of the Rings is one of the things that has my heart. It's stolen my heart as a movie series. So
if you're a hardcore Lord of the Rings fan, Shadow of Mordor will disappoint you a little bit because they stray a little bit from Tolkien's base.
Yeah, but I mean, I was at your house the other night, and it was so cool.
Yeah, you chop off a lot of heads in that game.
So many heads. It was so good. And then you, like, jumped from a tower onto this, like, wild beast.
Yeah.
And we're riding this thing around.
Yeah, and that's what doesn't make sense, is that some Lord of the Rings fans won't like how you can turn into a wraith, because wraiths are supposed to be humans, and somehow this human is possessed by a elf wraith, which doesn't make sense in the Lord of the Rings world, but it makes sense in the game.
That's good.
But, yeah. But anyway, the other games that I'm playing are Destiny, which is kind of new. It's been out for, I don't know, what, 9, 10, 11, 12, 6 months or so. 5 months. And then I'm also playing some of the older ones. Titanfall, I can't get myself away from. And Forza 5, which is just a racing sim. And then indie games. These are all pretty new. Most
the
of them
games
are
that I've never heard of, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah,
which is funny because those games were also ones that I've never heard of.
See, I've heard of all those, but only because of Jacob.
Okay.
Yeah, I played the Forza game, and that I drive a stick shift, and you had to set this up as stick shift in the game. Is it automatically stick shift?
It's automatically automatic.
Automatically
I switched
automatic.
It to stick shift because it's more sim like.
Yeah, it was so much fun, It had this cool thing. I crash into a wall, and then it's like, shoot, rewind. And then you just rewind until the point where you realize, I screwed up. And then you just go right before that and don't screw up. And
I wish all video games were like that.
I wish
that's
real
amazing.
Life was like that. Oh, that's right? Just rewind. It'd be like that movie Click with Adam Sandler. Is that him? Yeah. That was him. Anyway, Jacob.
So just to give perspective, given that we're talking to Jacob today about video games, friends of the podcast, I am not very good at video games. I don't know how to say that any plainer. The last time I was good at a game was Super Mario World.
Yes.
That was a long time ago. That was on a Super Nintendo.
Yes, yeah. Quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't call myself necessarily awesome at it, but at them, But I really appreciate them as an art form, as a medium for entertainment. This is my question.
I was just going to say, this is the answer to my original question that stumbled you.
Yeah, I don't know why. Anyway, so...
you started off slow.
Work there, that's right. Yeah.
And I respect them, and I respect them as how they can be a hobby. And I get frustrated as a gamer that people don't understand how it can be a hobby, and instead they attach it to addiction level, like video games equal heroin. Where video games can equal fantasy football. People can get obsessed with it, but also people can have a healthy obsession with it where they enjoy it with their friends. It can be on the same level as music. You go and find new music or reading, and you have your... Each person has their argument of whether it's healthy or not or whatever, but I think all hobbies can turn one way or the other. And
so do you think gaming is becoming more socially acceptable now?
To a degree, but also, like, we're talking, you know, about being Christianly here, and I find that the Christian culture in general is a little more bullheaded about accepting it as something that makes sense. Like,
they still see it as a time-wasting addiction.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to stick with, like, the fantasy football thing, because that's pretty pervasive. I don't do it. Do either of you do it?
I just did it for the first time this past year because there were some people at work that were doing it. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a lot of time, and it always seemed like something that those friends that I had who played it spent a lot of time, like, invested in researching different players and following really closely, and I didn't have that. So I did it casually as part of work this
year. Yeah, and you see that, and then, like, there's people who play video games casually, and then there's people who are into it and know, and then there's people who know exactly, you know, they know all about it. And then there's people with fantasy football who know way too much about it. And that's exactly just how video games can be. I try to stay away from, there is addictive habits that can be gained from or formed around video games. Mm-hmm. And that is where it becomes unhealthy when you obviously, like any addiction, you know, this is what we're talking about. Like, that's a whole other podcast to talk about, is addiction. But anything can be that way. But video games, I feel like at a meta level with humans, you know, humanity in general, it's kind of becoming more respected of an art form. Or at least an entertainment form. But a lot of gamer culture doesn't help perpetuate that. They help perpetuate the idea that gamers are just immature. And don't know how to not be addicted.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I just want to finish answering your question earlier. Whereas what I'm playing, because I kind of want to give these guys a shout out, because these are awesome games, and they are, like, as you kind of mentioned, that I'm a novice game developer. I am just working my way up through learning how to code and get an actual working game. And, like, I do, it's a working game, but it's no more than a tech demo of skill. And so I don't have a named game that I can say this is what I'm working on. But
when you do, I'm gonna beat it.
Good. Good.
Like, I need
QA testers. Yeah.
I'm gonna beat that game so good.
Yeah, but these guys, I look up to these indie developers that have small teams and end up making really amazing games, not by having the most amazing graphics and the huge polygon characters that, you know, you need an Xbox One or a PS4 or a PC to play on, but instead they're load demand games that are just really fun by mechanics. So the ones that I'm playing right now is, number one is Transistor. That's the only one the indie game that I'm playing right now that's not in early access. So it's a game about a mute opera singer that, she was... The story is still... I'm still working my way through it. So the story is a little confusing as to how she became mute, but she's an opera singer. So her companion is a giant sword called a transistor who talks to her. So most of the game's vocals, you know, voice acting is done through this sword, the transistor, that guides you through the game. So it's really interesting, very deep gameplay. But the story is kind of ambiguous at this point. I can't quite figure it out. The other games that I'm playing... Well, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just my... Is that... That sounds like something that I've heard from indie games, or maybe games in general, about the reason that people like them is that, like, you have to discover the story as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you kind of find to be... Like, I don't know what your relationship... Or, like, how you feel about movies versus video games, but a movie is, like, a pre-written thing that just guides you from beginning to end of a story, whereas a game, you're involved in that. Is that, like, yeah. one of the things that you find to be particularly...
I find when games allow you to discover the story for yourself, it's a much more satisfying experience. There are games that are written with a beginning, middle, and end of a story. Games that are very narrative driven, like The Last of Us, which is a survival horror post-apocalyptic game, and Telltale games that are just story focused. They have no action or anything. They just have like basic movements that you can do, and those are kind of ones that the story is presented to you in a very obvious way, where other games where you can kind of make your own story and it's presented in an ambiguous way that you can make it for yourself and kind of make up your own story about what is in the world. So Transistor doesn't quite work that way. It does have a story. It's just a little confusing as to how it's presented. But the more time you spend in the world, the more it's fleshed out. But these other games that I'm playing have absolutely no story at all. But they're some of the most fun games I've ever played. They're all in early access, and which you can like get them on Steam for cheap while they're still in development. And
they're like beta testing, and they're is it okay?
Yeah, they're so that's it's how developers help get funded for their projects is that they release something that is not quite totally finished, but it's released out there for people to test out and see, and then they get money. You know, they don't charge people the full price of the game. They get money for buying this unfinished copy with the promise of finishing it, and then you get to keep it for that cheap price.
Hmm.
So one of the big games I'm playing right now is Besiege, which is it has no story at all, except for you are this... I don't know, maybe this... You're this bodiless god figure, and you create siege machines and besiege...
This is the one you were showing me.
I was showing you.
Okay.
And it's all physics-based, and it is hilarious. Just, I love physics in games. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, just to... And I do want to mention, that is by Spiderling Games. I haven't heard of anything else that they've made, but they're great. And also, two other that I'm playing, also in early access, are Darkest Dungeon, which is a game in a subgenre called a roguelike that is interesting because characters don't only have health, but they have stress level. So, like, the more stressed out you get, your characters can abandon you and, like, run out. So the point is that it's called Darkest Dungeon, so you're raiding dungeons. And, like, if you run into an extra scary monster, your character can get a stress damage.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be like, he'll want to run away.
Very much like real life.
Yeah.
And if he gets... when I run into like some random person's house, stress level goes really high.
Yes.
You've done that?
I'll just run into this guy's house, you know. So yeah, if they get too stressed out, then they'll just abandon you, and then you'll be only left with half your party left. So that's an interesting one, and it has some pretty... Deeper kind of thoughts behind it than most games do, as far as like living mm-hmm. Christianly goes, confronting fears and how you face them. But anyway, the last one that I'm playing, and then I'm done with this list, is The Long Dark, which is basically storyless game at this point because it's early access. It has no story mode. It just has a sandbox mode. It's just
sandbox.
Sandbox.
You just play around.
Yeah, sandbox okay. meaning it's endless. So it's a survival, not horror, just survival game where you're given this very loose story of you crashed in the, in a plane in the,
Did I see a trailer Alaskan for this? Wilderness. Did we have a conversation about this?
I don't know.
It's very utopian-like. maybe not.
No, no. It's all it, nope. Canadian wilderness, not wrong. Alaska wilderness. I meant to say, sorry. Canadian wilderness, and everything is like log cabins and everything that you run into, and it's very fun, but also obviously very early access. And I look up to all these games for being inspirations. They use the same engine that I'm learning on, that I'm making my first game on, and they are great. They're simple. They're low demand on systems, so you don't need to have a huge awesome computer to run them. And they're simple graphics, and they're beautiful. And yeah, this one's all about just surviving and crafting items for you to survive and finding food and surviving wolf attacks, because there's apparently lots of wolves in the Canadian wilderness.
Well, log cabins and wolves. I mean, that's pretty much all Canada is, right?
Yeah. Well, and you got some moose, eh?
And some play a little bit of hockey, huh?
Yeah.
How about that? And Tim Hortons.
Is this like Western Canada by Alaska?
This is whatever. This is all of Canada. It sounds exactly the same no matter where you go.
Does it?
It does. It really does. side note.
It's funny, though. I feel like I need to say this. Did you know that Ontario is the only province, really, that speaks like that?
No.
You know why? Because the rest of it, they speak French natively.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's in Ontario, and then most of the rest of Canada, you won't have. But when you talk about Canadians,
when they come here.
Right. It's so prevalent.
I did work at a Tim Hortons for a little while, and they would come by, and someone actually asked me if they could get a Canadian discount. It's like, oh, I don't even know what that means. I'll give you a hug. It's no Canadian discount.
Were they wearing a toque?
Yeah, probably. What's a toque?
It's a hat.
Oh.
Yeah.
With the little, the flaps.
You know, I didn't know what a toque was until I played The Long Dark.
Oh.
Then I picked it up and I said, what the heck is a toque?
Friends of the podcast.
And then
video games teach you things.
And then I put it on and it said, hat, Canadian style. And I knew what a toque was after that.
See? Look at this. Look at this.
So I've noticed, as far as gaming goes, it's becoming a lot more artistic and a lot more, like, there seems to be a lot higher production value and stuff. Like, as movies start to get kind of, you know, up in the millions, and has there been a $1 billion movie? Probably. Like hundreds of millions of dollars in production value. Is that the same kind of trend you notice in gaming too? Or is it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. For the AAA games that I was talking about, like Destiny, that is a game that Activision, the publisher, had a contract with Bungie, the developer, for $500 million to develop Destiny. So their contract for that game is public, so you could see exactly what the $500 million went to. The idea is that they didn't use $500 million to develop one game, but they're using that $500 million to develop the game for a 10-year lifespan. So that is I don't know, I'm not in the film industry, so I don't know how much, you know, movies take, but
right.
Probably $500 million is a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're getting huge, but it also feels like games are getting more, or developers in general are becoming more comfortable with what they're releasing. Because if you pay any attention to the game industry over this last year, 2014 was kind of a mess as far as the game industry is concerned, because there's multiple games that's been released with game-breaking problems that people don't even want to play the games because they're so broken. So Elijah, you play Nintendo, which is a revered developer, except for some weird things that they do with their PR. But Microsoft and Sony and the major developers like Ubisoft and 343 Industries, they release games. Ubisoft had a huge debacle with Assassin's Creed Unity, that their game was pretty much unplayable when it came out. So that was another. I don't know what exactly the budget was on it, but there were so many bugs, so many glitches in the game that it was almost totally unplayable. As an apology, they end up giving free DLC.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is that why? Like, is it because people are so reliant on the downloadable content that they don't feel like they have to make everything perfect before they release it? Unlike, you know, back in the day with, like, N64 and even GameCube and And notice I'm just saying Nintendo systems.
Yeah.
That's how I think.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
We haven't forgot about you, Sega Dreamcast.
No, we haven't.
Yeah, that's a big thing that I feel like they're relying on, and that's part of the criticism of the industry, is that they rely so much on DLC they can't, or they're pushed out, the development is pushed out the door by the publisher because they want money.
Right.
And that doesn't mean to say that the publishers are always the evil ones, but the publishers set the release dates, and the developers can't always make them. So they say, okay, we'll release it and then create a patch.
Right.
So that's what the problem was with Microsoft publishing 343 Industries games, Halo the Master Chief Collection, which is one of my all-time favorite games. I don't even know if I mentioned playing it, that I was currently playing it, which I am.
Is that like one of those ones that you just are always playing?
I'm always playing it.
Yeah.
I've been trying to beat Halo 2 solo on Legendary ever since I got that game, and it's stinking hard. Anyway.
I beat that Legendary with a handgun, NBD.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be also beat Tetris.
I bet you also beat GoldenEye on Slappers Only.
Maybe.
I'll just slap at the Russians.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I did when sniping people. You just throw your slapper.
Yeah. Your hand just comes
off. Is that
off.
What that
rings back. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Take your arm off.
I wasn't aware. See, this is how little I knew about video games.
So anyway,
he
when they...
like
when
a
they,
sucker.
Yeah. When they released that game, like, the single-player stuff worked fine, but any matchmaking would take literally hours to find a match, where, if you know anything about Halo, multiplayer is a huge part of it. I like single player. I like killing aliens. I'm not a huge competitive player, so it didn't really bother me. But you take up to 3 hours, 5 hours to find a game, and that still isn't fixed. It was released in November. It is 4 months. Sorry, 3 months later, and it's still not fixed. And so they're giving away free DLC too, and like free maps and an entire free remastered game, Halo 3 ODST. They're going to remaster it for the Master Chief Collection and give it to the people who have suffered, quote unquote, suffered through this. Well, and I agree with that, quote unquote, by the way, because if you spend $60 on the game, you're expecting to play it. So
right. You're talking about suffered in the I know you did the quote unquote because like in the grand scheme of things,
So you expect to be able to play these games like Assassin's Creed Unity, which is broken, Master Chief Collection, which is broken, other games that are just broken out the door. And I feel like a problem in the industry right now is developers relying on DLC to fix their games, publishers pushing them out the door too fast, and it's really pushing gamers to have, like, you know, there's forums all over the place that say don't pre-order any more games, and now we're super questionable about or super suspicious about any game that's coming out in the future. Like, some games I'm really excited about are The Division by Tom Clancy. It's going to be released by Ubisoft, which had to shot themselves huge in the foot with Assassin's Creed. So it's the same developer, and I don't know if I want to trust it. I'm super excited about it, but do I want to pre-order it? Because maybe it'll be crap, because they screwed up Assassin's Creed. Same thing with Halo 5. I love it, but they screwed up the Master Chief Collection so much, do I want to pre-order it? I did, because I love Halo, but...
This, friends, is how the free market works. I'm just gonna say that.
Hashtag libertarian.
Yep, alright. Well, one of these days we're going to have an episode like that.
Yeah, okay. Okay, sure.
It'll be just me by myself late at night talking into the microphone. Yeah. Anyway, I've, in addition to the higher production value and stuff, I've noticed too, like, that there's a lot more arts and stuff going into it. I know it's always, I mean, since I pretty much started playing games, there's always just been a decent level of art to it, but now with the new graphics and stuff like that, it's kind of upped the level of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot more games being released that take a lot more artistic approach. Like,
yeah.
It's not just going for the gritty realism of Call of Duty games, which have their level of art, definitely, because they have to, each person and gun and building has to be modeled. But there's a much more artistic approach to games, like the one I mentioned earlier, The Long Dark, it doesn't take a photorealistic approach. Instead, it takes an artistic approach. It looks like you're walking through an oil painting, and it's beautiful.
Oh, there was a game, not realistic. A few years ago, a wolf, right? There was a wolf.
And oh, it was Wolf Among Us.
No, that's not what you're talking about. Was like Otaku or something? Otaku?
Oh, Okami?
Okami.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
You're walking through a literal oil painting.
Yeah.
Because, like, you...
I really enjoyed that.
Your wolf's tail is a paintbrush.
An hour that I played it, yeah.
So I really appreciate that, how people can see, like, pictures of games, and they think it's art. And they're like, I can be in that world? I can live in that painting? That's amazing.
Yeah, that's super cool. Mm-hmm. It's almost like Super Mario, Mario 64 jumping in all these paintings.
Yeah, right. And then there's games that do try to take the photorealistic approach, except they have things that don't exist in this world. Like I mentioned, Destiny, Titanfall, Halo. They all have... I love sci-fi. And so they take a more of a photorealistic approach, but they do it with things that don't exist in this world. They invent aliens, they invent giant robots that don't exist. And all of that requires a huge amount of imagination and a huge amount of artistic talent.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's super cool. So one of the things that we were wanting to ask you about was some of the things that have more like a biblical theme. I know that there have been games that have been specifically marketed to Christians. Like, Dan, what was that game that you mentioned?
Bible Man?
Was
that what it was?
I don't know. Was it, like Guitar Hero for Christians or something like that?
Oh, there was like a Rock Band. When Rock Band was really huge a couple years ago, there was a Rock Band Christian edition. It wasn't like the real actual game, but it was like...
That's what inspired you. It was in like Christian publishers. Right?
That's exactly what inspired me. That's actually how I learned to play guitar, which makes it really awkward now because I only know how to hit like barred chords on...
Just five keys.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Which actually... that's what... Most of worship music, anyway, it's five right. chords. So.
Five chords.
Yeah, slipping that in there.
Yeah, that's fine. So, as far as like Jacob, the biblical themes, like I've noticed that at least in some movies and stuff, like with not the most recent Man of Steel, but because I haven't seen it, the most recent one, but the one that came out a few years ago, like when he was going out of the spaceship or whatever, he was clearly representing Christ on the cross. Like as he's going, going out of the spaceship to go save the Earth. Are there the same types of things in games?
Yes, absolutely, definitely. Like you mentioned, just to answer your earlier question, I don't know much about that Guitar Hero game, but like there's other games like the Bible Man game, other games that's you controlled Noah trying to get animals into the ark, and just these unlicensed Super Nintendo games that were awful. Terrible.
That sounds like a variant of like Pikmin or something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, get this.
Like, blowing your whistle, you know how, the lions.
Yeah. You know how in Pikmin you can like pick things out of the ground and then you like carry them around in your hand.
Yeah.
That's how Noah was carrying cows around. So you like.
We just talked about this earlier tonight.
Lifting cows. Yeah.
We did.
So your job is to go get a male and female of like each of these animals and you pick them up and lift them right over your head. Like it's just ridiculous. So
he's huge.
And they're buggy games that don't make any sense. And then there's like this. No, Moses game and where like you lead the Egyptians slaves out of Egypt, and they're stupid games. They're games that were made specifically to try and cater to Christians, but they were poorly made. They were this was at the same time you were talking like Super Mario 3. Mm-hmm. Was out at the same time. That was like a beautiful game that was pushing the limits of the Super Nintendo. They released these Christian games that were. They looked awful, they played worse, and they were unlicensed. So they came in cartridges that weren't licensed by Nintendo, and other than that...
Now, what would be the reason they would... Is it because it didn't go through a licensing process with Nintendo?
I would...
Or because Nintendo didn't, like, fund development of these games, or...
Yeah,
I would say Nintendo's been picky as far as the things that they license.
Oh, Nintendo's very picky, but I imagine, they were one of the only two... like Sega and Nintendo at the time, so I don't imagine that they would have let much through, and I don't think they would have denied them on the basis that that they're a Christian game, but they denied them on quality because the quality was so poor. They don't want these games and
being associated
on their
with
system.
Their name.
Yeah. So they released them unlicensed, and they made it out there only, you know, very few, because they didn't have the publishing money for it.
Mm-hmm.
But
I could make another free market joke here, but I'm not going to.
But yeah, I don't really. Other than those, I don't know of any overtly Christian games that you're playing with Bible characters.
Right.
But and I think that's good, because there is so much symbolism that can be done through through games. And I know I've already mentioned Destiny a few times, and if you're a gamer out there and you're listening to this, I am aware of how many problems Destiny has. But if you play Destiny, you know that it's one of those games that you keep playing and you don't know why. And you can't stop playing it, but you hate it. And I'm in that same exact situation. So anyway, Destiny as a short story. So we're humanity, right? It's the world. It's the year 2015, somewhere in the near future.
That's true. It is.
Wow. Is this what Destiny is like?
You are painting a vivid picture, my friend.
We're somewhere in the near future, at a time where we can send humanity to Mars, which is conceivable. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what NASA is planning. In the beginning cutscene, it opens up and there's this giant white ball that shows up on Mars, and it turns out to be this thing called the Traveler. And maybe I'll just explain the quick story of Destiny and then explain how it parallels to the Bible. So the Traveler shows up. It ends up accelerating humanity to extremely high heights. The beginning cutscene says that our lifespan triples, and technology rockets hundreds of years into the future. They call it the golden age of humanity. And then this ambiguous character called the Darkness shows up, and it's very frustrating because I was expecting more of a story, and then they just say the Darkness. So it shows up, it fights against the Traveler. Humanity loves the Traveler because the Traveler has elevated them, has elevated humanity. So humanity wants to fight back. We can't do it. The Darkness destroys all of humanity except for in one city called the Last City. So all of this is very, very vague. And so anyway, then they're fighting back. The Traveler is all but destroyed. In its dying breath, it sends out basically these ghosts. They're called ghosts. They're like angels. They go out and they resurrect guardians to fight for you, to fight for him and push back the Darkness. So that's the loose story of Destiny. So, and I think that parallels so much to the Bible. The arrival of the Traveler is like creation. The Traveler shows up, and now in this story, humanity is already created. The Traveler ushers in the Golden Age, which is the Garden of Eden. Everybody is perfect. Everything is great. Everybody's living for a long time. Technology is wonderful. And this isn't like a direct correlation, but I feel like it really applies. So humanity doesn't fall because of a sin, as in like Genesis, but instead they fall because darkness seeps into the world. Darkness is obviously, like, it's pretty parallel to sin here.
Mm-hmm.
Darkness comes into the world and brings all these malevolent aliens with it. And these aliens destroy humanity, and they call them the Darkness. So when the Traveler falls, then it's like a parallelism to the Jesus sacrificing himself. He sacrifices himself to save humanity. So most of humanity is destroyed except for this last city, but where the Traveler sacrifices itself and dies, it dies over this last city, where anybody in the light of the Traveler, which is in this city, they survive. And that's like Christianity. When sin absorbs the world, the only people who will be saved from God's wrath are people who
under the light.
Are those in the light of God. That have been saved by the grace of Jesus Christ. So, I don't know if I made quite a clear case for that, but like for me, that it seems so direct. Like as humanity identify so much with sacrifice. Like if somebody jumps in front of a bullet for somebody, that person is deemed a hero.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody just gets shot, then it's just like, oh, that was sad. We identify with sacrifice, whether it be Jesus or, in video games, this traveler. It sacrificed itself for us. These ghosts go out into the world, rise up these guardians to fight back the darkness, and which in this world that we're living in is disciples of Jesus fighting back sin. It's our job mm-hmm. to go out into the world, witness to people, spread the light of God.
Mm-hmm.
So in Destiny, you're not converting aliens to be good people.
Oh, so it's not that close.
Yeah. but you're fighting back against the growing yeah. influence of the darkness, as we are fighting back against the growing influence of sin in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there, especially in that game, there is just so many parallels to much deeper things, like to much deeper, thoughts. So it's not like in Super Mario, you're not just jumping on bricks and eating mushrooms anymore. There is so much deeper of thoughts.
That sounds like that came right out of the 60s.
Yeah.
But that makes a lot of sense, because even if they weren't direct parallels, and this kind of speaks to what you were saying before about the artistry of, you know, creating a video game, they're beautiful stories, mm-hmm. you know, for people who... hold sacrifice up as something that's extremely noble, and you know it's worthy of the praise of other people. You know, to see somebody who is willing to sacrifice, even if they're not direct, they're both beautiful, like depictions,
yeah,
of that, or examples,
yeah.
You know? And so you can see that and be reminded of that as you play a video game, even if that's not how the artist necessarily intended it. You see the beauty that's present there, that's also present in the story of faith
yeah.
that's in your life too.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like not just that things need to parallel the Bible to be relatable mm-hmm. to our lives,
right?
But there's also just games that are covering much deeper topics than they ever have before. Again, you're not just jumping on bricks anymore. In Call of Duty, in Call of Duty, you specifically just shoot people, and your hero never shows remorse. So there are games that don't confront those mm-hmm. those deeper issues, like Call of Duty, like Battlefield, like most games, because it's easier to just get into the action, shoot some people, rely on good gameplay, but ignore the other stuff. Mm-hmm. Then there's other games that make you think about what you're doing. For example, that Darkest Dungeon I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is like a high fantasy kind of thing where you go in dungeons and you're fighting goblins and ghouls and skeletons. So it's not.
I like it.
Yeah, you like it. Yeah. So it's not necessarily realistic, obviously, but like you go in there, and if you kill something that was once alive, your character gets a bubble over its head, maybe. It doesn't happen all the time, but it kills like a zombie type thing. And it's like your character thinks, wow, that was a human. It gets stressed out. It's unable to fight because it's too stressed out. You need to battle through those things. You need to keep your team encouraged with bringing a priest along, bringing some type of cleric along to pray for your team and to keep them encouraged.
Mm.
So in those type of experiences, your religious aspect is so important because your team is dealing with the horrors of what battle can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it does the same thing in The Last of Us, which is a really popular. It was like a tons of game of the year awards in 2013. It's a post-apocalyptic survival game, and as we all are familiar with post-apocalyptic scenes, it always illustrates the fact that, okay, there's the enemy, there's the brainless enemies that we have to fight, like zombies, or in this game they're called clickers. And then there's one now.
Outside the window, listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
With the guy from the first episode.
Who wanted the chili?
And then there's the raiders, or like the bandits.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to kill them because you can't not. And this game confronts very, very bluntly the idea of justified murder versus not. Like you're a hardened old man named Joel, and you have a girl with you that's a young teenager, and her name is Ellie. Every time she never kills anybody until much later in the game where she gets alone. But anyway,
spoilers.
Spoiler alert. So she questions everything you do. The first time you kill somebody, she asks, "Why'd you do that? That was a person. That wasn't one of the clickers." And your character is hardened, but he confronts that. You see the emotion in his face. Mm-hmm. That narrative that they're walking you through, they make you confront and think about what you did.
But he has to justify it to her.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy. It's a video game, so it's easy for you to just say for. Not identify with that emotion of and just say, "All right, I killed him. Okay, whatever. Stop talking to me, Ellie." But if you're into this game, if you're following the narrative, that's going to affect you. You're going to say, "Why did I do this? Why did I have to do this?" And justify with the idea of what you have to sacrifice to survive and what you have to do to survive and deeper thoughts like that. And then there's other games like. Again, it's like high fantasy games like the Diablo series, which is a popular action RPG that you play as characters called Nephilim, which is a biblical term. So it's not like when the Bible talks about Nephilim, it talks about them being great warriors, and that's all it says.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never really know what they are. And this Diablo game kind of brings it to life. So you hear the name Diablo and you're like, wait, that's not a game that I want to play, until you realize that you're fighting against Diablo. You're fighting against his name in the game is Diablo the Primeval. And controlling your Nephilim, you fight the other demons named Belial, Lord of Lies, Asmodan, Lord of Sin, and Rakanoth, Lord of Despair. So it confronts these ideas of what evil can do to the world. You walk into a city. It's called the first one you walk into. It's called Tristram. Later in the game, you see it, and it's destroyed because of the evil in it. You walk into other cities, and like if you can't. It's a direct narrative, so you don't have a choice not to kill these demons. But if you don't, you see the effects of it. You mm-hmm. see, and why are you doing that? Well, it's because her name is Lord of Lies, Lord of Sin, and Lord of Despair.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it confronts this. It's more of an action game. It doesn't confront those ideas directly,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like
representative of
yeah,
larger themes. That
exactly. Video games are, I believe, are a good avenue to get deeper ideas across.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So. I do have a question about within the last several months. I think it might have been earlier last year. There was a pretty large thing in the media. We're kind of shifting gears here a little bit. They got a lot of attention for the video game world, and I feel like the video game world kind of tends to be like its own thing a lot. You don't hear about it in the news very much.
Yeah,
it has its own following. But there was this thing called Gamergate that was pretty big last year. It seemed really controversial. And I guess I know very little about it. But I know that it was a pretty big deal to those who are in the gaming community. And so I was curious if you can summarize like maybe a little bit about what that was and what happened and what maybe your take is on some of that.
Yeah. I avoided it like the plague.
And I don't play video games, so I only knew that it existed and didn't understand most.
I just saw it on Twitter, and I'm like, Gamergate had something to do with a girl. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I also avoid it like the plague, except I'm in this industry, and I'm trying to get more into it. So I do know about it, and it was very there are certain things that came out of it that are good, certain things that came out of it that are really ridiculous. So basically, the point was is that all said and done, like summarized in one sentence, it was the catalyst, like Gamergate, the hashtag, was a catalyst for an investigation, a deeper investigation into the game industry. And why did that happen? It's because it all started with a reviewer at... Actually, I'm not going to say with a straight that he is because I'm not positive. A reviewer was thought to have given a favorable coverage to a game because of a personal relationship with one of the developers or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, and then Kotaku, which is a game journal site, journalism site, they say that didn't happen. And then after that, at that point, it was a small issue. It's just like, did you give this game a better rating? Oh, no, he didn't. No, he didn't. He just... Whatever. You're misunderstanding. So the hashtag Gamergate was created by Adam Baldwin, where if you're a sci-fi fan, you'll recognize him as Jane from Firefly. I don't know if you know what that is, but anyway...
I don't, but I know that there will be some person listening to the podcast. One of our podcast listeners
that
will
person,
know, I'm sure.
That person is a friend of the podcast.
That's right.
So...
Friend of the show, unnamed podcast listener.
Yeah. After that, Gamergate, because of, you know, whatever, all these gate kind of type of scandals, these game journalism publications all attach onto it, and journalism feeds off of negativity. Mm-hmm. Even game journalism, where we like to think that the game industry or community is a close-knit community, except we'll all give into that same... what's the word here? Vitriol?
Mm-hmm.
If it's there.
Mania.
Yeah. And the mania was that this Gamergate was created and people are arguing and now everybody started to question, are people getting better reviews because they're paying for it? A popular YouTuber, Total Biscuit. You ever heard of him?
I think so. I don't know.
Yeah, he's really, you probably just heard the name. Total Biscuit, the Cynical Brit. Is his name, and the questions were about him, of if he was putting out YouTube videos because someone paid him more money, and
this is basically a conspiracy theory.
Exactly, except it, a lot of it was founded, and like he lost tons of subscribers. I'm not going to get into whether I agree or not because I really don't care. Like I said, I avoided like the plague too, but then like all these gamers are hashtagging Gamergate because like. Oh, well, that means IGN and Polygon and Joystick are all, which are all game journalism sites, they're all probably getting paid too. And like, you know what? I don't care. I have my websites that I trust for game news, so I'll just keep going to them because whatever. Because they haven't really betrayed my trust at this point. And then all these journalism sites start saying they all release this almost the same article in like a 2 or 3 day span asking what is a gamer, and like me as a gamer, I'm like, what kind of a question is that? Because we're getting more people that are having questions like, or saying things like, we have mobile gamers that play Clash of Clans all the time, and then we have hardcore gamers that play super competitive games all the time. So what's the difference between those? And like, everybody gets all up in arms about everything, and this is where I just get to the point where, like, I say it doesn't matter because somehow feminism and the portrayal of women in video games got involved, and it all attached onto Gamergate. So at this point, Gamergate isn't one issue; it's facing the issue of too many things. Mm-hmm. What is a gamer? How are women presented in games? Are game journalists lying? Are game journalists getting paid money that they don't deserve? It gets so messy and lost that I stop paying attention.
Right. It just gets so like muddied.
Right.
That you don't even really know what it's about
there
anymore.
There is no single Gamergate. It's just Gamergate. Now everybody's all, you know, searching everybody else's pockets for what they're doing, and I think it's unneeded drama that's already hurting an industry that just started to get its feet.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. See, I know nothing about that.
Yeah.
This is why I stick around with Mario and Zelda.
Yeah,
because much less drama. There's no drama. Actually, as somewhat of a side note, I was one of those weirdos that waited outside for the Wii. Back in the day, I was waiting outside of Best Buy, and I remember specifically because I think was it Xbox 360? I think was coming out at the same time as the Wii.
Yes.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
They were coming out the same day. And we were outside of Best Buy. Out to the right, there was the Wii people, and outside the left, there were the Xbox people. And the Xbox people got into four or five fights. The cops were called two or three times, I think. And they were yelling, and people were pushing each other. And no joke, on the right side, where I was sitting with all the Nintendo geeks, we all brought our DSs. We're playing Mario Kart, and at one point, I said, I think I'm going to run up to Wegmans. Can you save my spot? This is 4:30 in the morning. Can you save my spot? I'm going to go get some sushi. About 15 people hand me $10 and say, so I get $150. I'm sitting outside of a thing that for the Wii, I could have basically bought one with the money they gave me. So they gave it to me and said, can you buy me some sushi too? So I went to Wegmans, got some sushi, brought it all back, and they were like, oh, I kept your seat warm. Here you go. And it was like this delightful little community. And it was the weirdest thing. So I love the little Nintendo buddies that I made that day. But so real quick, So I from what I understand, one of the stores, I don't know which one, opened up their doors really early. Someone got an Xbox, grabbed the Xbox out of the box, drove by Best Buy, put it out the window, and said, woohoo, you suckers, or whatever he said. They hit a speed bump, and he dropped it, and it shattered on the ground. And we were just like, and then the dude jumped out of the car and was like basically scream crying and putting all of the stuff back in his car, and he drove away and everyone was laughing at him. But
yeah, so you tell that story about your little Nintendo buddies, and sorry, that sounded
kind of Nintendo buddies.
Your Nintendo buddies that you made there, that seemed like pretty cool dudes. And then you go into any Xbox, any public game. You keep your chat on for 10 seconds, and you will run into 100 derogatory terms for your mother, your dog, your grandmother, you. It's a completely toxic community that's, as I was saying before, like, the gamers are not helping the image of gamers at all.
Right. Well, I mean, I had a fun little time when I had my little
there's the little parts of Of gaming community that I could tell stories. I know we're running out of time. I could tell stories about, like, awesome people that I met and, like, people that I want to meet up with in real life. They were just super cool people. And
probably that 14-year-old kid that called your mom a hoe, right?
It was him. I want to meet up with him. Yeah,
I want to shake his hand and rip it off and beat him with it.
Greet him with a holy kiss. New Testament.
Yeah, I meet really cool guys that work day jobs, they have families, and we just get together for a few hours two times a week and do some fun stuff on games. And but then there's the disappointing majority that do things like rage at games and call you all sorts of names.
Yeah. Well, in closing, I just want to ask you what kind of stuff you're currently working on. How would we get in contact with you? Things like that.
Well, as I said before, I'm currently just working on getting my first real game. Like, I have a working game, but it's just a demo at this point. So I have no actual game, but I will soon. I set myself a deadline. By this year, I'm going to have a game, and that is so ambiguous. But I'm going to have a game, no matter how, whatever. I just need to finish something. And yeah, so anyway, it's not titled at this point, but to get a hold of me, I tweet about all sorts of just gamer news and game development news and indie stuff like that. You can get a hold of me at jazzmasta_j at... That was like an email. No, jazzmasta_j at... That's at...
Jazzmaster.
I'm saying it the wrong way.
You're flipping out.
Yeah.
So Jazzmaster, that's with an A.
Yeah.
M-A-S-T-A, Jazzmaster_J. Okay.
Correct, right.
Yeah. Awesome.
Excellent. Well, Jacob, we really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Yeah.
Both Thanks episodes. That's a two-parter right there. That's an exclusive interview, so it was really cool. I learned a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Podcast listeners, we hope you enjoyed that. Make sure you follow up with what Jacob's working on. Remember, you can tweet at him at jazzmaster_J and keep up with what he's doing and look out for the game when he releases that.
We'll have all the relevant links in the show notes and stuff like that, too.
That's right. That's right. And just to close up today, remember, for us at Live Christianly, you can find the show notes at livechristianly.com. We have links at the top of the page where you can listen to us on Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, all that, and connect with us in different social networks. Remember, if you like our show, share us. We would absolutely be amazingly appreciative and unbelievably grateful to your kindness.
And if we see you in real life, I'm sure Dan would give you a hug.
Yes, absolutely.
A long, awkward hug.
That beard love. That beard love. So follow us on Twitter at LiveChristianly too. Tweet us, leave a message for us. We'd love to hear from you. We appreciate you tuning in for Jacob Thompson Part 2.
Episode 3.
Episode 3. I don't know. So thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you very much.